Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut or shortened due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today is Andrew Radcliffe, co-founder and CEO UK of Spirosoft, the global technology services company. Having held senior IT roles at, amongst others, Siemens and Ordnance Survey, and as digital advisor to the UK government, Andrew, determined to fulfil his ambition of starting his own thing, spotted a tension in the market between technology providers and businesses. Spirosoft was founded in 2016 in both the UK and Poland by Andrew and three colleagues. Their aim, simple actually, to provide faster, cheaper, innovative digital transformation. They're now one of Europe's fastest growing specialist technology companies, serving more than 200 global clients across industries such as automotive, healthcare and life sciences, robotics and geospatial services too. It's great to have you here. I love meeting people when I haven't heard of the company. And then I go in and I go, oh, wow. I mean, back when you set this up in 2016 with your co-founders, could you have imagined in your wildest dreams, if technology enthusiasts dream like mad people like me, could you have imagined it would be this?
I think no, really. We dared to dream. We had an aspiration. We tried, you know, to paint that picture of what good looks like. But it was, I mean, in our wildest dreams, we wouldn't have thought we'd get to where we are today. But we had a plan, and we worked hard, and had a bit of luck, and things have worked out quite well, really.
Just make it sound like walking. I went to get the bus, and then I got on the bus, and I arrived at my destination. 1,500 people, give or take.
Yes.
8 countries, with a plan to have around 3,000 people in the business within the next sort of 3 years.
So, actually, just to correct you, it's about 20 different cities now in 9 countries.
Keeps moving on, so even since this morning.
Absolutely, the rate of growth is fast.
I mean, joking aside, you know, you set this business up then, and it has dramatically, exponentially grown.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we started in 2016. In the first year, we had, I think, 12 people. And then in 2019, we had approaching 400 people. And it's just scaled up and up since then. So, 1,500 people as we are today.
I'm pleased I got that bit right.
You got that bit right.
Tell me what, in business terms, not technological terms, technology terms, what it is that you actually do. And give me a couple of examples. I read some amazing stuff about kelp. And I read some amazing stuff about maps and COVID and skin disease and the like. Yeah. Just in it, so that I really get a flavour of the benefit of the thing.
Absolutely. At its root, Spirosoft is a technology services business. So we have real technical experts, deep technologists in very specific areas that really, really understand how to create, you know, sort of best-in-class, innovative technology. And what we do is we work with our customers to help them bring their maybe digital change or maybe their new products or their innovation to life. That's the intention of it. So we're a trusted partner, helping hands that come to work with them together to build these sort of new technologies and these new solutions to real-world problems.
So, do they have the idea of what they want to get to, or do you say, well, you could do that?
It's a bit of both. They have a starting point. Sometimes it's well-rounded and it's, they know exactly what they need, and that's fine. We can help do that. Sometimes it's an idea, literally, and it can be in an entrepreneur's mind if it's a completely new business. But a lot of the time, it's a two-way conversation. We want to have a robust conversation to get the best outcome. So even if the customer's intentions are fairly well polished in their view, we still will challenge that thinking and maybe add in a bit of extra sort of innovation. Have you thought about this technology? Have you thought about this way of doing it? And that gives a greater outcome.
I was teasing you before I got to the point of saying, so what is it precisely that, what is the benefit of what Spirosoft does for its clients? Just give me a couple, Andrew, a couple of quick examples so that we get a flavour of those things.
Sure, no problem. So I think we do a lot in geospatial. So geospatial is location-based technology, and that comprises looking at data really that could come from a satellite, could come from a UAV, a high-altitude vehicle like an airplane with a highly powerful camera, capturing data in different ways, so imagery in this instance. And what we do is we take that data and we can glean from that information certain things, like, for example, in sustainability, looking at carbon footprints, looking at where emissions are coming from, we can help narrow that down, that search, and we can identify problem areas. So looking at kelp beds, for example, in the seas, looking at cities for hotspots, and really using that information for good. And that's what we can do. And we can work with that data.
Like Superman, who's able to look through things, like X-ray vision.
Like, exactly.
For land.
Really powerful
Amazing.
Insight.
Yeah. Brilliant. And then just one more. I read something about lockdown, actually, and some stuff that you did at time.
We did, that's right, during the COVID times. Yeah, we did some simulations, some data modelling, looking at how the spread of COVID would move from city to city, so we can help the state prepare for that and deploy, you know, resources and try and stay one step ahead of that expansion. So that was very much a data project, a data
so
simulation
cool.
modelling.
And look, you yourself are obviously rather steeped in the technology. I found out that the Amstrad that arrived in your house when you were probably, how old, 10 or 11?
I think probably about 13, 14.
The Amstrad, a computer. If you're not familiar with an Amstrad, it is one of the older computers, a bit like a Sinclair ZX81, which was my computer of choice. I had no choice, obviously, but that's what I got. But tell me about what it triggered for you and why now, sort of 40, almost 40 years later, you're in this business. This is what you do. What was the magic?
Yeah, that was a real moment for me personally. I remember my dad came home with this Amstrad CPC 464. It was the keyboard with the cassette deck built onto it. You remember, maybe some of the listeners will remember those. And it was like they never
used to load up. I mean, football manager used to put it in and plug it and hope that it would load. And every one in every nine times it loaded.
Yeah.
You could hear this funny sound.
That's right, all the squeaking sounds. But it was like magic to me. It was so addictive. And I remember I bought some of the magazines at the time, which were really teaching you how to code. And it was BASIC was the language. And I'd spend hours going through that magazine, typing in the instructions into the computer, you know, and pressing go and then debugging it, getting it to work and really trying to understand, well, how did that happen and what could I then do with that information? So I did things like personal projects. So I can remember one, and it's a funny link to geospatial, which we were just talking about, where I drew a map of the British Isles and I worked out how to create the different pixels on screen and highlight those in different colours and draw the shape of the British Isles. And for me, it was like those little bits of insight into different activities, into different projects that really drove me to learn more and more. So I took O-level computer studies off the back of that when I turned sort of 16. And then really that gave me the spark to try and really broaden my outlook on technology.
And just describing that visualization of the British Isles, I can see it. And I'm going, that must be cool, because one often associates the understanding of technology and coding and things with huge amounts of logic. But what you've just described is something highly creative.
Yeah.
That juxtaposition, is it a juxtaposition or is it just actually you're a very creative person who happens to be logical?
I think to be a software developer, you need to have an element of creative about you. You need to think outside the box. It is a very logical, rule-based endeavor. But actually, to give those instructions, you need to be thinking wider. You know, how do I do this in different ways? Solving problems. And sometimes it's mathematical problems. Sometimes it's, you know, where to position things on the screen. And you, as a developer, need to bring all of that together to give those instructions to the computer.
It's really annoying when you meet someone very clever, who's also very creative, and that's my business shape today. It's Andrew Radcliffe, co-founder and UK CEO of Spirosoft. Go look them up. They're doing amazing things. Much more coming up from him in a couple of minutes. Right now, though, we're going to hear a taster from the Mishcon Academy digital sessions, which can be found on your podcast platform of choice. Mishcon Derez, Ashley Williams, and Michael Rose, a senior associate at DRD Partnership, discuss how companies can navigate their AI strategies.
The Mishcon Academy Digital Sessions. Conversations on the legal topics affecting businesses and individuals today.
What are the top tips for companies or advisors of companies to help them navigate AI strategy and really cut through all the noise that's out there?
So I think there's a couple of things they can do. First of all, recognize where AI could fit into your operations and what you do. It's one of those things where you can easily get lost in all the potential different things you could do with it. But start out with what do we actually deliver on a day-to-day basis? What are the AI tools that are available, and therefore, where could we fit them in? Secondly, how can AI impact your ability to deliver your service? So it could be an external thing. It could be that AI could be used from the outside and could impact your ability to deliver. So in our line of communications, we're increasingly aware the AI tools can be used to potentially create hostile campaigns against our clients, or increasingly the way that people are looking into companies or entities or individuals is by using AI tools rather than perhaps the more traditional Google search. So identifying where those external factors are. And then if you're trying to get your positive message out there because you're using AI in a really innovative sense that you want people to know more about, how can you make that story linked to a real, tangible, everyday impact that people can really get behind? I think it's easy with a topic like this to get lost in some quite technical, quite jargony language. But how can you get your argument down in simple terms that people will understand and can immediately relate to? And similarly, if you're using AI in a more complex way that perhaps might create a bit of uncertainty or a bit of fear in your target audience, how can you explain in a simple way that they will understand what you're doing, why you're doing it, and how it maybe isn't something for them to be too worried about?
The Mishcon Academy Digital Sessions. To access advice for businesses that is regularly updated, please visit mishcon.com. Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishcon Derea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast. Drum roll, ta-da! And you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your podcast platform of choice. Maybe I should have done the drum roll there, but anyway, we don't mind. My guest today is Andrew Radcliffe. He's the co-founder and CEO UK of Spirosoft, the global technology services company. We were hearing before about the good old days of getting into coding and building things and all that. Life obviously then moved on, and you go and do, you know, proper grown up jobs, Andrew, in big companies, really big companies. And then you hit a point, and this is what's always interesting to me: what precipitates the bit before this, and the this is you decide to do your own thing. So you're mid-40s, which is sort of, you know, I meet people that start in 20s, some people in the 60s. It's kind of a little later than some. What tipped you over? What made you think, you know what, I'm not going to work for someone else ever again?
So yes, it was a key moment really in my life. I was working at the time for Ordnance Survey, which is the UK National Mapping Agency, and I had an incredible opportunity to create effectively a business within a business. Ordnance Survey needed to innovate. They paper map sales were in decline, and the rise of the new sort of Google Maps and other providers were really coming strongly. And Ordnance Survey needed to create a digital solution to meet that. And I had this opportunity to effectively create from a blank piece of paper a digital engineering function inside that business. And that opportunity allowed me to think really broadly around culture, around technology choice, partners, you know, the whole ecosystem of building out a very new delivery capability, but inside a government company. And I had this opportunity and started work, me, employee one, on day one, and added my sort of team, chose those technologies, put agile working into this. For anybody who may not know what agile is a set of behaviors. It's where people work together very transparently, very collaboratively and work in an iterative fashion towards very well-defined goals. And we started working in this fashion, and it proved really powerful because the results and the software that we were building were visible. Every 2 weeks, there was visible, almost tangible outcomes.
Here's where
we're
at. Yeah. Got to share it and have a look and go, well, what about this? And everyone went, what about that?
Exactly.
And off you go, and you go, and then you iterate again.
And you iterate more and more.
And you love doing this, basically.
Absolutely.
And then and then, how did it go into, do you know what, I'm going to do this for myself? Because once you've established that bit, it's kind of, obviously you're enjoying it, but very different thing to then say, I'm now going to go and get clients. I'm now going to build my own thing.
So I've always had a little entrepreneurial streak in me, and I've
like a dirty
always,
secret.
a bit like that. I feel like I don't want to be restrained in my working.
Where was that
from,
Andrew? Where's that come from? Do you think?
I think, well, in my mid-20s, actually, I went overseas. I lived in the States. I lived in Florida. I went there, just set of golf clubs and a laptop under my arm, literally. On the plane, and I had a job working for Siemens just north of Orlando, and it was a 9-month contract. It turned into 5 years, and it was me on my own in a different country building technology. And from that, I learned so much about, you know, looking after myself, my own personal growth, but also from a career context, you know, meeting new people with different cultures, looking at how they go about their daily life at work, the different ways they do things and so on and so on. And I think that sort of independent streak really stuck with me from that point on.
But just, and that's brilliant. I'm intrigued though, to jump on the plane with a computer and your golf clubs at that age, that's pretty ballsy stuff. That's a brave move. Can you, if you go back just very briefly, because I'm going to bring in Charlie Parker in a minute, because that's a natural thing to do. If you very briefly go back to that moment, where did that come from, that gumption to just go, I'm going to go now?
It was an opportunity. I see opportunities, and I've always lived my life by, if opportunities come to you, then you should try and grasp those. And what's the worst that could happen? You know, you stop and you change direction.
Just now jumping forward to the moment of setting up the business. So this, the ordnance survey sort of bit works, you're doing what you need to do. And then you say, I'm now going to go into this full time. What tipped you over into that state?
So I saw a lot of success at Ordnance Survey, that we really created something quite amazing, delivery of great technology. There were some awards and things that were won at the time. It was a real success. And I've always been in my career, I think I've always been a builder. You know, that's the nature of a software developer. And once it's built, I'm looking through really for the next thing. And I think what drove me then was, well, I've created this now. And I was in my mid-40s, and I decided, well, actually, I think I can do this for other people. This was so successful, and it worked so well.
So who was client two?
Well,
client one, I guess, actually.
Yeah, well, first client was a company called Geoplace, which is in London, the city of London.
Yeah.
So we set up the company with some trusted friends. We were all really, you know, we're experts, I guess, in our specific domains, and pulling those people together with a drive to be successful, to make this work, because we all took risks setting the company up. You know, we left good jobs, we had a conversation with our wives and so on, that, you know, this is what we want to do. And we had this vision, and it was just about making it work. There was an option of failing, just wasn't there. We were very single-minded, and it was about finding those customers, setting up those teams, and just doing what we do best, and that's building that technology and getting on with delivery.
And finding the customer that was going to pay some fees, that was going to lead you to be able to put food on the table?
Yeah,
was that easy?
It wasn't easy, no. But what I think, one of the sort of lessons I think I would pass on to people maybe listening, is if you have an idea for a company, make sure you tell everybody about it. So the power of your personal network, getting a business off the ground, is really significant. And I made sure that other people I knew that worked in technology that probably had some challenges, maybe around innovation or lowering costs or access to software engineers, their talent, whatever it may be, to sort of share those concerns or issues or challenges. And through that discussion with my personal network, we were able to identify opportunities, and those opportunities became real customers. And amazing. That's kind of how we got going.
And now here we are, you've grown this company. It still sounds like it's very values-driven. Listen to you talking about a happy person and delivers better work, and that probably chime with pretty much everybody. What have been the, if you could isolate one or two really big inputs into why we're sitting here talking about your successful business now, just give me those, top two only. What would be the Andrew secrets?
I think our company is a people company. You know, it's a services business. So it's all about the people and the behaviours that they have. So you can teach technology to people, but you can't really teach the behaviours. So we hire based on behaviours of people. And sure, we want to make sure they have, you know, technical competence, but it's about behaviours and the relationships those people have with those end customers. So that has enabled us to really scale the company.
I read something else about also this strong team mentality thing. Would that be the other bit? So it's all very well, you've got the right people. I know you're based here on, I think it's called the Silicon South, Bournemouth.
Yes.
But who knew that Bournemouth would be called Silicon South? But there it is. Poland, which is, as people will know, a fantastic place for high-level, very high-skilled technology people, community. And this team bit must be, you know, talk to me just briefly about what you mean when you say strong team mentality, beyond the obvious.
Sure. And it comes back to those agile values, agile behaviours. So when you work in an agile team, as it's called in the software world, it's all about working together to a common goal. Transparently, you hold each other to account. Everybody knows what everybody is doing in that team. There are daily reviews amongst the team members to show the things that have been completed or outstanding, or are they blocked, in which case those are problems to address. So it's a very day-by-day approach, and everybody is communicating in the team. So it's a very open place. And by understanding that approach and taking that approach, it breeds that iterative nature of delivering something. And I think the customers really like that because they can see the product almost appear before their eyes, and it's touchable and they have direct input into it. In the old days of software development, you used to take the requirements, go away, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, even 6 months or more later, you would come back with the product, you know, da-da, there it is, here is the product. And guess what? The customer goes, well, actually, I didn't want it, you know, green, I wanted it blue. I wanted this button, you know, to say this different thing. And, you know, it's too late. Now you've got a finished product, you've now got to go back and change, which is really expensive to do and time-consuming. Why not address those things much earlier in an iterative fashion along the way?
You make it sound so simple, but I know it isn't. Final chat with my guest today is coming on. That's Andrew Radcliffe, just in case you didn't catch that before. And we've got some music from Coco Roco. That's in just a moment.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
Andrew Radcliffe is my business shaper, just for a few more minutes. You've talked about where the business has got to. And you talk often because your clients need this. They need to have their problems solved in simple terms. What are the problems that your business has to solve in order to get to the next stage, to grow? Because people talk about growth and they think that intrinsically that's a good thing. It isn't necessarily so. Why do you want to grow, and what's going to stop you growing?
So we have some quite aggressive growth plans that are publicly published. We're 1,500 people today, and we want to double our company's size within the next few years. So that is a significant, you know, amount of growth in a relatively short amount of time. The way that we would do it, you know, is the pattern that we followed always. So we look for centers where, you know, engineers are bred. So we look at the technical universities, we look at where the sort of populations of these people are, and we make sure we're present in there. We go to the events, we make sure that our brand is recognisable to those communities of people.
Where are they now? Just give me a couple. We mentioned you're in 9 different...
Sure. I mean, the obvious ones, of course, are London and Manchester and so on in the UK. But, you know, we're a global business, so we have to think outside of the UK too. So major cities, looking at the good engineering universities, because out of that you get spin-out companies, you get those people really wanting to progress in their careers. So we make sure we're present in those areas. acquisition of clients, of course, drives everything else. So revenue comes in, that allows us to invest and hire those people and, you know, and open up offices in other locations. In the UK specifically, over the next few years, you know, our headquarters is in Bournemouth, but of course now we've opened...
Haven't heard that before, actually, Andrew, those words put in the same sentence.
Yeah.
But that's cool, isn't it? I mean, no, but in a... And just a quick one on that. Why? Why Bournemouth?
Bournemouth is home to me. I live just outside Bournemouth. One of the ambitions I had right at the start was almost like a legacy. I want to have a presence in my hometown for our company, which will be like a lasting mark, employ local people, put jobs into the local communities, build some great technology from Bournemouth and put Bournemouth on the map as a sort of a place to be, not only for the beach and the sort of lifestyle aspects that you get in that part of our country, but also that it can be a place that a technologist can have a great outdoor active life, but be able to connect with the right technical communities, to be able to innovate, to be able to use their skills to the best means. So that really is kind of a legacy, a lasting mark that I always wanted. And now we have a reasonably significant presence now in Bournemouth. The brand is growing and hopefully becoming more recognisable. And hopefully, you know, one day when I do hang my keyboard up, there will be a lasting mark there.
So finding these centres of great skill, high skill from the universities and the spin-outs, as you mentioned, that's a part of it. And the new business you talked about, is there anything else? I mean, that sounds like I'm going to do this and you're going to keep on going. Is there anything that's going to stop you?
No, we're very single-minded about this. And we haven't really talked about the way the company is funding. It's all organic growth. And so we reinvest into the business. And that really has helped us keep focus. You know, that we're spending the profits on the company. Mm. And that reinvestment and that fuels the focus of what we're doing. We had one acquisition along the way, I should say. We had in Poland, a Better Software Group joined us a couple of years ago. They were about 200 people in size when we made that acquisition. So I think acquisition will be part of our plan as we go forward. But it's all about hiring people, winning customers, you know, maybe pushing more into the UK public sector than we are today. But the plan really is to just keep growing. And that's what we're going to do.
And is that the joy? Is the joy just the whole thing?
Yeah, I love it. I have to say, I love it. What drives me really is that building the technology, solving business problems through technology. That's what drives me on. And technology, as we all know, is moving so fast. You know, there's going to be a new app, you know, out every day and the new iPhones coming and so on and so on. And it's becoming much more accessible. AI, of course, is a big buzzword. Everyone's talking about it and we're all scratching our heads about the best ways to deploy it ethically. Mm. And Spirosoft is right at the heart of that story. We have huge experience with data, working with data, and data feeds AI. You need the data to train the models. And we're at that center of that story. So hopefully we can guide the growth and penetration of AI into different industries to help with people's day jobs, to accelerate how efficient they are. And and when we go from there.
It's been great to chat to you. Thank you. And I'm pleased that you're human. I mean, I'm a big fan of AI, but I think the human in front of me has I very much enjoyed listening to. And you will also be choosing, your song, and you will be telling me, and it won't be the AI, it will be Andrew Radcliffe. What is your song choice and why have you chosen it?
Thank you. Yes. So the classic, Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World. Personal reasons for that choice. 21 years ago, I became a father at that point when that song was being played on the radio. So lots of fond memories, and that actually was this weekend, 21 years ago.
What a Wonderful World from Louis Armstrong. Hardly needs an introduction, does it? The song choice of my business shape today, Andrew Radcliffe. I see opportunities, he said, but it isn't just about seeing them, is it? It's about grasping them, and that's exactly what he's been doing. I've always been a builder. Again, another key characteristic of founders. And if you have an idea about a business, tell everybody you know about it. Dead simple, but boy, should everybody do that too. Great stuff. That's it from Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM.
In partnership with Mishkonda Raya.
It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishcon.com/Jazz Shapers.